Every time Luis Ogola comes here, I get excited. I know that we're not going to run out of things to talk about, and this was absolutely one of those situations. We sat down and we started talking nonsense, and within 5 minutes we were arguing about political ideology, capitalism, communism, history, and he was insightful. We got in each other's faces. It was terrific. I've always said that an argument is something you reserve for the people you really care about, and platitudes and pleasant, polite conversation are for people that you don't know so well. So this goes up, it goes down, it goes everywhere in between. We spoke about his mom getting her degree late in life. We spoke about a lot of things, and Luis is someone who's in touch with his emotions, he's in touch with his thoughts. He's terrifically smart because he's a comedian. He has to make people laugh for a living. So it was great to sit and pick his brain. Here he is, Luis Ogola.
CliffCentral.com.
Luis Ogola.
Yeah, that's my name.
Another brilliant year.
I'm getting there. I'm working.
I spoke to you a year ago, and you've done so much international stuff since then. It's amazing to me. Like, a lot of comedians reckon you have to choose. You have to either be here and killing it, or you have to be overseas and killing it. But you've done both in the last year. I mean, you've done it for a couple of years running now.
I mean, the overseas trip. I mean, the move to London was just what you needed. It's the same with like most industries. Like, I feel most industries thrive in particular spaces. And comedy thrives in London and New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of like had enough of the English industry. It's weird to me because a career in the English industry in like England is like being in a panel on TV.
Really?
It's like, oh man, I don't want to do this. And so, yeah. I mean, you could like...
What is it, restrictive?
It's not restrictive. They just have a totally different idea of what a career is. And also there's like a cue that's unmentioned, like you're like, no, you can't do that, you gotta do this before you do that. And it's
almost like the ANC. You have to be on the list, then you have to be in the top six.
Then
you've got a chance of being president.
No, but it's the same everywhere. Like most, I mean, the thing that I probably know more than anything is football. You have to be in the structures. They got to see you play as a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Do you hold the values of the organization? Do you, you know, and then they, you know, then you kind of like, oh, okay, cool. It's very rare that someone will jump that queue. And that's just the idea of organization. It's not isolated to the English comedy industry, you know, the ANC or football. It's just that's how you kind of maintain a certain order. And my idea is quite, my brain is quite a disruptive brain. It doesn't really like to, because the minute I fall in, I've never belonged to any organization, SRC or anything like that. I've always pictured myself outside of those things. So when those kind of things exist and they're trying to
co-opt you in.
Yeah. I resist.
I love this because I had this conversation with a friend of mine the other day. And in fact, I think we even spoke about it on the show afterwards. I had this realization that for me, it's really important not to belong. Like it's counter-evolutionary because, not counter-revolutionary, counter-evolutionary. Because
right.
In the old days, I mean, I'm talking old days, even up to 50, 60 years ago, if you were a human who didn't conform, you were outside of the tribe, you would die.
Right. I don't know.
You had no structure to rely
yes,
on.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's bad for your social and psychological well-being.
Yes, yes, yes.
To me, I mean, like, I obviously belong to my family.
Right.
But I don't have a tribe, so to speak. I don't, you know, there's not like a club that I go to. I don't go to church with a bunch of people. I don't have a sort of a circle of identity that I belong to.
Right.
And I kind of relish that. The minute you bring me into your group, I feel like I don't want to be there. Do you understand what I'm aiming at?
I get that. I think like
I don't want to be put in your box.
I totally get that. I haven't really like thought about it as much maybe as you have. There's some ideas where I'm like,
well,
okay,
only,
maybe I
only,
need to I need to apply myself and think about this.
It's only occurred to me in the last couple of months. I had a bit of a breakthrough moment where, you know, what is a group? Like how do you know you're in a group?
Right.
Like, what is it about that that makes people feel, because it doesn't make me feel good the way it makes other people feel good. People like to be popular. They like to be wanted. They like to be needed.
Right.
That kind of stuff turns me off. In the worst way, I really genuinely relish those moments where I know I'm in the outside. I'm in a satellite.
Right, I'm a minority.
Right. I like that.
I read this book about, and it talks, I forgot the threshold number. I think the threshold number.
Yes, it's called.
Sapiens, History of Mankind.
I know what you're talking about. It's like this, the number is 70.
No, it says like 100,000.
Oh, hang on. I know what you're talking about.
100,000 is the
it's the number of connections threshold. Anyone can make.
No.
That are meaningful.
No. It just means that 100, it says 100,000 is the threshold of a society that would need a government.
Oh, right. Okay, there's a different number then to
it
the
says,
one.
It says like before that, I think we can just function and you have to, we can function and...
Like a small anarchy.
Yeah. Like there will be no anarchy or anything. It's just, it'll function. And they've done tests where I'm like, oh, well, once you reach a certain, that number, you need organization. You need someone in charge. And he says it really cannot function. It hasn't been recorded that it can function. In the history of mankind, we haven't recorded a function beyond that number. Like, so if you really think of like... civilization in that way, then I go, oh yeah, that kind of makes sense. Makes sense. That at some point you gotta go, oh okay, cool. These people need a government
because they're too many.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a threshold. There's a threshold. There's someone who studied and said, yo, a threshold in the history of mankind. This is the threshold where we all things will collapse.
Do you think, because I mean, looking around us now, and this is not where I wanted to take this interview, but we're going there, forget what I wanted. When I look at what's happening politically in the world, right, let alone in South Africa, but because we know South Africa, let's focus it here. I think people are looking at what's going on with leadership at the moment, and they're thinking, I don't know that we need these people. They're not doing anything for us.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have to... This is how I see it, and this is what gives me peace, is a society, which is what my show talks about, really. A society, we tend to look at history in the last 400 years, 500 years, 600 years. And if you think of like that, if you look at the world history like that, you're really looking at it extremely Eurocentric eyes. Mm-hmm. Now, and that is fair because... When Europe went to the inquest of the world, they collected a lot of information. So they made it, when the Spanish went to Spain, they brought scientists who were either going to collect new information or were going to back up the information for them to run the situation. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you look at 600 years before that, the Spanish were colonized by Africans, right? Mm-hmm. For 700 years before that. But we never look at the history in the spectrum of 2,000 years.
But this is, isn't this what...
Yeah, but hold on. This goes to my point. Now, if you start looking at history like, let's maybe 2,000 years, 5,000 years, 10,000 years, you will then realize that every society has collapsed. Every major society has collapsed. Now, what would make this particular... in inverted commas, Western civilization, what makes it immune from collapsing? And maybe what we are seeing
is its collapse.
Are collapses of Western civilization as we know it.
I've held for the longest time, and I think Gore Vidal wrote a book to this effect, that Western civilization is in its death throes. You know, what we consider Western.
Yeah.
In other words, what was begun by, you know, Augustus Caesar 2,000 years ago, when he codified the laws, when he decided to... institute the Pax Romana. All of these things are things that are now coming to an end. Those things are starting to break down. The Roman civilization within itself broke down after, I think it was 1,000 years.
Right.
Then you had the Dark Ages, you know, where basically it was the rise in the Middle East of Islam under the Ottomans, their predecessors, Saladin and those people. And then you had the Middle Ages, the medieval time.
Right.
And I'm talking about Europe again. As you say, we've got to be Eurocentric because that's the history of kind of the books that we've read. And then you had the Industrial Revolution, I mean the Enlightenment, the French Revolution, the Industrial Revolutions, and then you had this world that suddenly became known to us, where there were cultures that were outside of kind of what was the written history of
right,
the time.
Right.
Up to then it was Egypt and Greece and Rome and all that sort of thing. And then we suddenly see like a whole lot of other civilizations that are just subsumed into what is Western civilization.
Right.
And they had no say in the matter.
Right.
They were just brought under that control, whether they liked it or not.
Right.
And you look at where we are in South Africa at the moment, we do have this mix of kind of this longing for a time and a place where we were free from these European ideas.
Right.
But also we're so into them because we like what they bring us. We like what they've shown us. We like the legal system because then we know where we stand. We like property rights because then we know what we own. We like to buy nice things, and who wouldn't, because it makes life a little bit more luxurious and
right.
comfortable. But actually, we don't know what the hell we want in government. So we've got this, we've got a Westminster system. That's what we've got. Our politicians are, they're aping a system from England, which didn't even work well enough for the English.
Yeah, these are extremely complicated ideas that when I came over, I was like, damn, I wasn't expecting to have this kind of discussion.
But what do you want to talk about?
No. We could. I mean, I'm saying we can talk about this. And so for me, and this is the thing that I actually talk about in the show. And I mean, it's obviously funny when I talk about it and I glance through it and I talk. I think what is happening in the world, I think people are starting to own they're starting to head towards what's happening, like to what works for them, as opposed to this is how things are. And like in Poland a couple of days ago, there were like 60,000 right wing, outright, not whatever you want to call them, that's not the point. And when people have to show their visibility and be like, oh, we're still here, you're like, oh, okay, this is really coming to an end. And when you have to fight, for your thing, that thing is dying.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I don't want, and you're like, yo, man. And so I was having a conversation with a friend, and I was saying, like, and I was saying, actually, capitalism has failed humans. Capitalism has not offered any solutions to any of the problems. And
that's not true. Poor people in every country in the world where there is capitalism, the poor people are less poor than in other countries.
Okay. Yeah, but I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the environment.
What do you mean? Like nature?
Yeah. Yeah, capitalism does not.
Don't tell those me. That are the, those China, are the, China, you can't breathe the air. That's supposedly not a capitalist country.
Right.
You can't breathe the air.
Okay. Hold on. When I talk about this, let's not talk about it also comparatively. Like, let's not like.
By the way, I'm not an ideological.
No. I'm neither here or there. So I can go anywhere. I'm neither capitalist nor social. Yeah, I'm whatever. My theory is whatever works. Now, but when I look at all the systems that we have in place, I go, capitalism is the one that's failed the most for me.
Communism's failed the most.
Nah.
Okay, show me where it succeeded once. Because capitalism succeeded almost everywhere.
Where's capitalism succeeding?
What is the most perfect country to live in the world at the moment if you have nothing?
What does perfect entail?
If you have nothing, where's the best place to live? And if you have something, where's the best place to live? And if you have a lot of things,
Gareth,
where's the best place to live?
Gareth, okay.
It's all the same country. One country.
If we're gonna condemn slavery.
Hold on.
If we're going to condemn slavery,
yes,
we have to make the connection between slavery and capitalism.
Well, if you're living in 1840. Where is the greatest opportunity for people to improve their lives? Why do you never see migration into communist countries? No, this is important because this is such a trope that people trot out and I hate it. It's so wrong. Where is there a communist country people are migrating into?
Anywhere
in the world. Cuba.
Gareth, listen to me.
Venezuela, Russia, China,
Gareth,
name one.
Gareth, listen to me. I said capitalism is failing society, right? I didn't mention communism.
Okay, so
I didn't say
shelve communism.
Right. So
name a capitalist country people aren't migrating into. Gareth. Why are people moving into capitalist economies? Why?
Gareth.
You think they're stupid? Is that because that's the only explanation.
Okay.
People are dumb enough to move into capitalist countries.
Okay, I'll give you a very simple example, and you can connect the dots for me because you're a clever guy. Under Gaddafi, Libya was a thriving country.
Well, thriving, you sure. Well,
They had the lowest unemployment rate in the continent.
Hold on, Gareth. Then that's like those people who say African populations grew under colonialism.
I want you to connect the dots. To connect the dots because you're a clever person.
Give me the dots.
Libya, Gaddafi, whatever the situation is there, has an the country is doing okay.
You mean there's rule of law, his law?
There's a law.
Could you practice comedy in Libya? Hell no.
Now, you cut to 2017.
Okay, and it's a disaster.
You have Libyans migrating to Italy.
Now, hold on.
Who orchestrates, who orchestrated the removal of Gaddafi?
The US.
And Europe.
Yeah, sure.
Right? And so, but they never take responsibility for these things.
Listen, yes, they do. They have to now because there's migration.
Huge
amounts of migration.
Yeah, yeah. They take responsibility of it on the other side when you're talking about immigration. But they never talk about how they influence emerging economies. They never talk about that. So what I'm saying is, I'm saying that these are all capitalist ideas. These ideas of
invading Libya had nothing to do with capitalism.
It has absolutely everything to do with capitalism.
Tell me how. Who's orchestrating
this? Gaddafi was planning to sell oil in the value of gold. So if you wanted to buy oil from Libya, you had to. He's the one person who's been fighting. For the unity of Africa. Listen, Gareth.
Okay, he's not the one person. Obasanjo and Thabo Mbeki, they established the African Union as it is today. The only reason they couldn't make it a comprehensive African Union is because of Gaddafi. He was the problem. He wouldn't let it happen because he wanted to be in charge. So sure, if you want a benign dictatorship, Gaddafi's your guy. If you're a Libyan who follows his rules.
But
he was a warlord.
Hold on, but you
he
have
ran a
okay,
crime
I understand.
Family. Yeah, this guy.
But hold on.
We're still looking for his gold.
Hold on. But you have a flourishing economy.
So that's like saying Saddam was good for Iraq.
Yeah, but
you think that was true?
So, in other words,
you're willing to accept peace and law and order, even if it's under a merciless dictator like Mobutu Sese Seko or Idi Amin or Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein, or let's say, for example, Hugo Chavez, or perhaps King Henry VIII of England. You're happy to have that kind of rule.
I'm actually quite.
You can't be a Democrat then. You don't believe in democracy?
I believe in whatever works. I'm not a. That's what I
capitalism
mean.
Capitalism works. It's the market. Supply and demand. So it works. So why don't you like capitalism?
Because capitalism brought slavery. Capitalism
has got you employment all over the world in different places, doing your thing, allowing you to sell your wares, which people love. Would you be able to do that in communism? Hell no. Do you know why? First rule of communism, totalitarianism. In other words, any thought outside of what is allowed by the state, not allowed. It's crazy. I can't believe that you would think capitalism is a failure when capitalism is what nourishes and feeds people. You're looking
I don't believe that.
Okay. You're making the classic mistake of putting capitalism and slavery into the same basket.
Why would you not put them in the same
basket?
They are
not the same. Slavery was a hideous system of selling human beings.
Yeah, but the idea of selling another human being is for profit. That's capitalism.
Doesn't consider everything a commodity. That's not cool. Adam Smith didn't think that slavery was cool. He's the father of capitalism.
When I was making this argument, I wasn't going to sit here and defend communism. That's not what that was.
Then
that's
let's
not what
leave
I'm
it out.
Saying.
I'm telling you, pure capitalism. Let's just talk about capitalism.
It has failed the environment.
It has not failed the environment.
What are you talking about? Who are the biggest polluters?
The biggest polluters in the world are industrialized nations, but they're not all capitalist nations. So you can't say it's industry that has failed the environment and it's regulators who failed the environment, the state. Because ordinary people, ordinary African subsistence farmers are not killing the economy, the environment, right? We all agree on that.
But they're not super capitalists.
But they're industrial.
but they're
industrious. These are people who are trying to feed their families. They're trying to make a little bit of money, which is capitalism. Of course they're capitalists. Why else do you grow vegetables? Just enough to feed you and your farm, your family?
That was the initial idea until food was turned into
a commodity.
Yeah, but it's food. It grows from the earth. You should just be able to access it.
I can't believe
you understand what I'm saying.
You're the smartest guy I know.
No.
This makes no sense to me. You're saying if you have a farm, you have an acre of property, that's all, and you grow enough for you and your family, but you grow a little extra, you shouldn't be allowed to sell that?
Where did I say that?
That's capitalism. Why would you have a problem with it?
Okay, here's what I'm saying. And notice you haven't allowed me to finish any point. I haven't finished any point. And so I want to get to my point. I really want to get to my point. And I think that capitalism for me, and this is my experience of capitalism, is it doesn't, for me, provide any solutions to the world's problems. In fact, I feel that capitalism amplifies the world's problem. Now, if you're going to tell me about regulators and the failure of regulators, that is exactly my point. I'm saying, why do I need a regulator? Do you understand what I'm saying? I think, like, if the system is in place and it's supposed to function and supposed, and it doesn't benefit everyone, it benefits the people that have access to capital. Not everyone has access to capital. So for me, I feel it doesn't help me. It doesn't help the environment. It doesn't help equality. It doesn't. It makes it worse. It really does. Like, if you look at America, healthcare is, you know what I mean, it's not accessible because it's a big business. Pharmaceuticals, they run a fucking muck. And this is a basic need for human beings. And we don't have to get into race or whatever kind of stuff. Humans need, but the idea of, and those med, do you understand what I'm saying? So for me, I do feel that, and I'm not saying we should scrape it or not scrape it. I'm just pointing it out that most of these problems. And so even when we look at how the CIA operates, it operates, and FBI and all these countries that are from Lumumba, Gaddafi, all these dudes get killed for the idea of infiltrating their countries, taking all the things that are going to benefit their people by capitalists to make more money. For me, it's just a crazy idea that we still fuck with the system. It's a crazy thing for me.
So what I'm hearing is, and you can correct me where I'm wrong here, you're telling me in your experience of, in other words, this is an opinion thing. It's got nothing to do with the facts of, like, what real capitalism is, what real communism is, what any other social arrangement is.
Okay.
This is about your experience of it, which doesn't count under laboratory conditions. In other words, it's a very individual thing. That's like me saying, well, my experience of a Steven Spielberg movie is that it's crap, so all Steven Spielberg movies are crap. Well, that's what you were saying. In your own words, you said, in my experience of.
Yeah, experience just means it's from what I see. It's what
but
I gather.
You can see the evidence. I'm telling you what the evidence is. The evidence is that there is no one who moves from a communist country to a capitalist one. There's no one who moves from a capitalist country to a communist one. There's no reason that people would leave a perfectly happy, well-balanced Venezuela or anything else to go to America if America was so shit. And if America was the place, you said healthcare.
America.
Why is America dealing with immigration, not emigration? Why is South Africa dealing with emigration, not immigration?
Yeah, man. You know what? Let's talk about something else.
No, you're smart enough for me to actually have a decent discussion with this. I can't talk to normal people about this. They fade off.
I am a very normal human being, but this is what I'm trying. So if you look at the financials, just the whole thing for me is fraud. It's not. The whole thing for me doesn't work out. The financial system doesn't work.
Okay. I don't want to talk about this because we're going to get into circle. I don't want. We can have this in our private time.
But
I think we're boring the audience. Let's talk about interesting stuff. So I want to know, your mother just got her degree.
Yeah.
She's how old? 58 years old?
Yeah.
She got a degree.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it is, but I mean,
no, I couldn't go back to university. Now I never got my law degree, right? I never finished. I couldn't go back. That takes a huge amount of determination.
Yeah.
And for a woman to decide that that's what she wants to do, and to go and do it when, you know, there's so many things in life that could be priorities to her. She's probably got a lot of things that she should be doing. And the fact that she wanted to go and enrich her mind and she wanted to get this qualification.
Well, I mean, my mom.
It's a big deal.
My mom has just been a good student. She's always been like just a really good student. And she was an A student. And when she finished matric, I think she finished matric either 79 or 78, whatever. And they just didn't have the funds to take her to university. And I think she tried to go to university after that. And then she had us, and you know how kids will ruin your life.
Sure, you have. That's a priority I was talking about.
Right.
Among
others,
yeah.
And so for me, I mean, it is incredible. I just think that, but I don't want to go back to that because I go back to a system which was capitalist she was in this system which was a capitalism system, and so that system was failing, and even though the system was failing grossly with human rights, people were still moving to South Africa. So you can't judge. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, you talk about have like a great deal of what do you call it? Lithuanian Jews in South Africa,
correct?
Who immigrated here?
Well, they also came here because after the war, before the war, there was nowhere else for them.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I've got a friend whose dad was from Uganda who immigrated to South Africa during the most horrific times.
Yeah.
Now, when I talk about the failure of captives, and I don't want to go back to this, I'm trying to make people connect the dots, because if you
Can I suggest you're connecting two separate things?
I'm not connecting let me make the connection, and then you'll. So in our argument prior to this, you were talking about, do people immigrate to these countries because these countries are flush? Yeah, but there's a gross violation of human rights.
South Africa was not flourishing. It was a fuck up.
Yeah, but
it was a fuck up because the regulators that made it racial.
I understand that, but if you were at the time and you were judging it on the things that you would say, people are moving here. Things are happening.
This state was bankrupt. The apartheid South African state was bankrupt when the governor of the Reserve Bank handed over the keys to the new government in 94. He said to them, "The cupboard is bare." They had no money. They had spent themselves into a hole. That was far from what a capitalist society does. They don't try to control. Capitalist society says, open the markets. Let capital flow where it will. Don't try to control it. What the apartheid government did is it tried to control everything. It tried to make black people this, white people that, Indian people that. They tried to make us live in certain areas, tried to make us not have relationships with each other. I couldn't trade with you. You couldn't trade with me. That's not capitalism. So apartheid was almost antithetical to capitalism. Why are you putting them together?
Man, I am thoroughly perplexed of how you're not connecting these dots.
I understand that it looks like it was a free market system under apartheid. It really wasn't. We had connections to other capitalist countries, sure. But that was because they saw opportunity here in terms of them making money. But they didn't structure apartheid. We didn't have the US dictating, because if we did, there might have been a free market and you and I might have been able to trade with each other if we were born 20 years before, but we wouldn't have been because of that stupid government we had before and the stupid system that they put in place, which had nothing to do with free market systems. Capitalism is just about the free market. You want to sell something, I want to buy something, here's the price. That's all it is.
Nah.
It's an economic system. It's not a political system. Nah. Capitalism is not political.
Nah, I disagree. But so my mom didn't, the opportunity wasn't available to her. So she couldn't go to university. And she had us and she raised us for like 30 years. Then she went back to school. Only because even in that time when she was raising us, she was always reading and just like informing herself and just being like a read person. And she just quit her job. And I was like, yo, I'll support the move. I remember when she retired and she's like, yo, let's.
She quit to go and study.
Yeah, she retired. And we just had the conversation. And she's like, I was like, okay, cool, let's do it. And then, you know, we had like a sort of like a team situation of like, okay, cool, you'll do this. We'll, you know, we'll support. I think she's writing. She's still at school.
Actually. She's writing exams now.
I think she's writing. Like, my mom. It's cool, but it's weird when.
Doesn't it feel weird that you're like there when your mom's writing exams? And
yeah, it's crazy because sometimes I come home from like a party or like a gig at like 3 a.m, and then she's there doing assignments, studying. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I just go to sleep. But it's great, and so. For me, that's a great example of people just a person who's just like...
She's not giving up.
She's not giving up. And she you know...
The system couldn't beat her.
Yeah, the system couldn't beat, but the system gave her a hard time. But I mean, because time moves, you can't really reverse a lot of things, but you still...
But does it worry you? Like if you look at her life and you see the things that she couldn't do because of the system... And obviously things were very much rigged against someone with intelligence like your mom who wanted to do something because there were only a certain number of avenues open to her because of the system.
Right.
And maybe she would have become the person who cured cancer. Maybe she would have invented the Saturn V rocket. You don't know. Do you think that she might have those regrets because now she's finally having this renaissance in her life? She's exploring not that you guys, she would have wanted to have the kids that she had.
I think she shouldn't have had us.
I think she's very proud. Isn't she proud of you?
She probably is proud. And I mean, she is proud. She, yeah, I think this is another, I was like, I don't want to have kids at all because it's really like, it's like you have to give a shit about another human being the whole time.
That's never switches off. Thing.
You should never switch off. And I'm like, that's a lot for me. And so people don't consider that. And you have to share your resources.
All right. So let's just talk about this for a second because I think we're in the same boat here. Like when you say to people that you don't want to have kids, that doesn't mean you don't like kids.
Oh, no, I did kids.
Right. Exactly. It doesn't mean that you are a selfish human being. It just means that you have other priorities.
Yeah. It also means...
You might change your mind.
I think I'm definitely going to change my mind. Yeah. I think I'm definitely going to change my mind. But like right now, I couldn't be able to have the time for a child.
But do you meet people who say to you, oh, that's the most selfish thing I've ever heard?
Oh, no.
I understand?
I have different friends to you. My friends are way more understanding. Your friends are pieces of shit.
But I mean, I'm talking about acquaintances, people who don't know. Because the friends mostly understand. That's why
listen, I like kids. I really like kids. I have two great nephews, and I have the best of time with them. Then I hand them over to their parents, and I'm like, hand them over to my sister. Have these little sons of bitches back.
How old are they now?
10 and 5. 10 and 6.
So my brother has a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, and they're very cute. But
they're great.
Like the minute they start having tantrums and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I can stand the tantrum. I just don't want to. I just don't think I guess if I had a kid, the idea of being the responsibility of a kid being thrusted on me, I would probably step up. I know myself. I like my thinking is very self-centered. My manager who's in London was like, oh, she might be going to LA in. She used to be an agent in LA, and she's like, I'm going to LA in Jan. Mm-hmm. Now imagine, I don't want to think about, think about like.
That far ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to think about, I just want to go, okay, I need to pack my bags and go.
I can't plan a holiday, man. When last did you have a holiday that you actually planned?
Exactly 11 months ago. I went to Argentina. It was the worst decision of my life.
Why? What
fucking
did you do?
Hated Buenos Aires. I hated that
Why?
Place.
What happened? Is it just a shit not, place?
I mean, listen, first of all.
I've never been there.
Yeah, don't go.
Okay.
Fuck Buenos Aires.
Why? What did they do?
I just didn't like it. It just didn't have pizzazz. It just didn't have a thing. It was like in the middle of South. It's in South America. It's very, everything is very Eurocentric. And then it's like, okay, cool. I get the history of that. But then there was, it was just bizarre to me, man. I was the only black person literally ever. So, it's just not really a black country.
You've been in that situation before.
But not like that. Like I went 4 days without seeing a black person. It was like crazy. I was like, damn, there's no, so it's
really, there are that few black people in Argentina?
In Buenos Aires.
Really?
No black people in Argentina. Buenos Aires.
It's weird to me because you see Chinese people all over the world. You see them in New York City. You see them
There's not even Chinese people in Buenos Aires.
It must be one of the few places in the world that you don't have much diversity.
No, there's
and
no.
I wonder why.
They have European diversity, like in the sense
they've got the Germans and the Spanish.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. They eat a lot of meat.
Yeah, they've got cattle farms there.
Yeah.
Argentine steak is a big deal.
The only good thing about that whole trip for me was this idea that I could not talk to anyone for like a week. I didn't say anything to anyone for a week. I went out, even when I went out and I couldn't speak to them because they speak Spanish and I don't speak Spanish.
Why did you choose that as a holiday? It sounds like a very bad life decision.
It was close to, I didn't need to apply for a visa, and it was close to the UK.
Apparently that's okay for Somalia too. You don't need a visa.
To get to Mogadishu?
If you want to go on a holiday.
Fucking go to Mogadishu, man.
When you chose Buenos Aires, at least you would have seen some black people in Somalia.
You know, man, like I was just like, I didn't like Buenos Aires. I was going through my grumpy time. It was like the first week of the year, and I was like contemplating how am I going to start the year, what to do.
I went
to like a very grumpy time.
How do you get out of that grumpiness? Because and here I'm asking you for advice more than anything else. I get into those situations too. You know where you just close, and you don't connect to other people, and you feel a little bit isolated, and you get a bit sorry for yourself. I mean, I'm talking about me now, not you. But this is how I describe it. And then it's hard for me to get back into it. And because once you start, it feels better already.
Right.
You're starting to have conversations with people, and you realize that you're not an island. And, you know, it means something. You love working again. You enjoy doing stuff. But when you're in that place, that grumpy, whatever you want to call it, you're just not reaching out to people, and they're just not reaching into you. You feel very isolated.
For me, because I have a very different default setting about life. People often say, and I've tweeted this, and I got lambasted. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll take that, but I know what I mean. I don't overvalue happiness. I consider happiness as I consider happiness as one of the many experiences that I'm going to experience. And so that slump is just one of those like no one ever goes, how do I get out of this happiness? But it ends, right? But it does end. Like that thing that gave you that euphoria ends. And so why wouldn't the bad time end, or why wouldn't that other thing end? It's just an experience,
right? And you endure it,
yeah,
good or bad.
Yeah, you experience these things. So it's so weird. Like, so now, if I really like someone, whether it's in a social space or like in a very intimate way, I communicate that because I'm experiencing it. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so like, so I don't necessarily do the what do you call it? The play games anymore? Because I'm like, because I'm missing out on an experience of hanging out with this person or not, or whatever the case is, but I'm not scared of the experience that's coming on the other end. And so a lot of people trying to get the happy result. And you go, it's the same like when you watch football. Your team can't win all the time. It has to lose sometimes so that the winning is good. It has to lose a couple of times. And you go, oh, that win felt good because
you know how
it
has to be done.
So if you always like happy, you never really it's not happiness. It's normal. If you're always happy, then that's not happiness. Because it's just you have nothing to compare.
So you're always present.
That's the idea, which is a very hard thing to do. I always try to be in the moment. So most of the time, I will switch off my phone. If I'm sitting with someone, I'm like, I'm experiencing this conversation. Even if it's a 9-year-old, I will not pick up my, because I'm experiencing the conversation, because they're giving me their entire time. So I get annoyed sometimes when people are on their phones. Like I don't really get annoyed per se. I just go, oh, I wish you would just experience this conversation with me. And so for me, I don't, my quest is not happiness.
And for you, it's not good or bad. It's just part of the experience.
It's part of the experience.
How did you get to that stage? Because I'm obviously unevolved. I need to figure out how to be like that. Because to me, you're always striving for the happiness, right? Which is stupid. I mean, your explanation makes perfect logical sense. But how do I get to it? Do you just sit in the moment and you go, all right, this is where I am. This is where I'm meant to be. Let me just live it. Enjoy it. Into it. If it's a terrible experience, like if you go into a movie and it's bad, do you get up and leave or do you sit through a bad movie?
I don't think I've walked out of a bad movie.
Because for you, it's experience.
Yeah, it's part of it. It's like
you always want to see how bad it can
be. Yeah. Also, sometimes people go. Oh, I hate this album. I'm like, have you heard it? No, but I hate the artist. I'm like, yeah, go listen to the album before you have the thing. So I really like the experience. I like the experience of sitting in the grandstand and watching the football game and I like the experience being squashed by these fans, and you just gotta experience as many things as possible. That's why I went to Buenos Aires. I think it was an experience, but I found like a very weird economic experience in Buenos Aires. And when I was there, I was chilling with my friend Carolina, and she showed me around this really fancy place, and there was a dude just lurking, and I mean, I didn't really care. I was just like, whatever. And I was eating, and the dude grabbed my plate and he ran. Now, remember, there are no black people in this place.
What, in a restaurant outside?
In a restaurant outside. Like a
park. He grabs your whole plate and runs off.
Grabs my whole plate and he runs off. And the guy in the restaurant apologized. I said, oh, no, don't worry about it. Then it kind of like, in my mind, I was like, holy shit, this is real. Like,
Is it poverty? Is it?
Definitely. Why would you?
Yeah, of course.
Why? There's no other reason. There's no other reason.
But didn't they have that? They had that massive.
That was in 99.
Crisis.
Yeah. So for me, I can sit and say, oh, Buenos Aires was this. But that for me was such a crazy moment.
How did your friend explain it to you?
She spent half the time talking to the. We laughed about it for a long time. But when I got back to I was like, South Africa is poor, but.
Not that desperate. Homeless people aren't going to come and grab your plate from you, you know?
Yeah, or whatever the...
That's desperate.
Yeah, but then you must remember, that's a capitalist country.
Well, if you read about what Perón was doing, it isn't. And remember that since Perón, all they've done is tried to do different kinds of Peronist-type governments. Anyway, I don't want to get that. I just love the fact that you and I can have a serious conversation, a debate, and I get heated up, you get heated up.
Oh, yeah, it's cool.
People always think that's a fight.
And, no, it's
and
not
that's
a fight
something
at all.
South Africans need to get over. We need to figure out that if we disagree about stuff, and when I'm arguing with someone, like passionately arguing with someone, to me, that's the most meaningful conversation I'm ever going to have.
Right. I actually went to a club recently, and I actually enjoy the experience of the club because I hadn't been to a club in a long time because the music is too loud. I swear to God.
We're getting old.
If they turned it down a bit, if I could just talk to some people. Yeah. So I enjoy like being in around a table and just talking to people.
Yeah.
That's what I enjoy more. But then because I do that a lot, I enjoyed the club so much. So it was like this, just the idea of being outside and everyone is dancing and you dancing and just losing.
And you might get a word or two here.
Yeah, you might get, but I just like that idea that I was totally out of what I'm usually doing. But for the most part, people cannot separate. Like, I find it like crazy sometimes, like, even like I've caught a lot of flack on social media about like just generally talking about a rapper's work.
Mm.
And then I go, I didn't like, and then it becomes a thing. And I'm like, no, I don't dislike the person.
Yeah, right.
I don't dislike the person. I'm just, if I put anything out, there's going to be people who like it. But I get why he would get the offended by it. It's, he's a public figure, I'm a public figure, I have an influence, he has, you know what I mean? So I could be influencing a group of people to not like the thing. But I do think that people should just understand the idea of engagement.
Yeah, and correct me, you're the one with the experience here. When you're when you're making people laugh, which I've always said is the hardest thing you can do, especially when you're doing it for money and people are paying to, they arrive at your show and they're like,
I think playing in the Champions League final is the hardest.
Ah, come on, dude. Some of those people are not particular. Kick a ball. You make people laugh. And for you, if you don't do your job properly, they let you know. I've always said that this is the hardest.
It's an immediate result. It's in front of you and it's immediate.
And it's not always positive. Every comic, the greatest comics in the world have had bad shows. But the thing I was getting to with you is that when you're doing that, when you're having those engagements with people, you're going to say stuff that you think might make them laugh. And sometimes there's going to be one person out of the 100 people who doesn't think that's funny at all, for whatever reason. But you've got to take that risk, right?
Right.
And if that person wants to, like, heckle you, you've got to have some kind of comeback for them. It's a bit of interplay.
Right.
But the most important person in the show is you, and the second most important person is probably going to be that one who argues with you. Because when you finish the show, you're going to be thinking about that person.
No, I'm totally on the other end.
Are you able to get out of that? Because
I have a totally different tactic. I never attack the person. So I never give them the power. Sometimes is given. So you give them the power by engaging. Mm. Like if you talk to some, if you like, I had, like, this is an example. I love rap a lot. I love rap and I can only have rap conversations with only a few people. So 2 weeks ago, I had a very heated rap conversation with Cesar Lom, but I can only have that conversation with him. Because I know he knows the music the way I know it. So we can go to references that the other person don't know. But if I argue with a dude I don't know or whatever the case is, I give him the power to enter my life and conversation.
And you don't need to do that.
I don't. So it's the same with the audience. I got to go, nah, can't give you that power of engagement. I don't antagonize you. I don't attack you. But I just go, I don't want to do this. I sometimes say, hey, man, you can say what you want to say, and I'll listen to you, but I won't respond. I'll just continue like you never said a thing. And then that disempowers them.
Yeah, big
time. Because like you said earlier, one of our big needs is attention.
Hmm.
And if you give the person attention, very passive kind of attention, hey, man, I get it. You want to say something. I don't really want you to say that thing. If you insist, you can say it. But I'll wait
till I finish.
Yeah, you know what I mean. And you'll be very surprised. So the minute you become aggressive, the person has ammo. But if you don't become aggressive, they just go, ah, fuck, this guy is wasting my time. So most of the time, the way to. I'm not saying this is how you should approach it, because some of the issues that people are passionate about, are very important. And sometimes you want to scream. But for the most part, what I do is that I just go, I don't want to yell back.
Does the same thing apply on social media?
Probably for the last year, I haven't really engaged on whatever the discourse is on social media. So if I go on my timeline and they're talking about a particular thing, I'm going to tweet about what I woke up thinking about, as opposed to plugging into the discourse. I haven't involved myself, because what happens is, maybe you add a layer, because you remember what happens with social media, it's great because we can mobilize quickly, but sometimes you mobilize around shitty ideas.
Yeah.
Things that we haven't really thought of. It's the unintended consequence of being able to mobilize so quickly. It's the same as the unintended consequence of fast food was obesity.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, oh, okay, cool. We have this great idea. And then you go, okay, cool. I don't want you guys to attack me, because I'm attacking your idea that you haven't thought of thoroughly. So I've had that a couple of times. The biggest explosion was the Fees Must Fall march.
I remember that.
And my only thing was like, fees are like 30 grand. Let's say, which 30 grand? Mm-hmm. You're wearing 3,000 rand shoes.
Yeah, but you see,
are you telling me I can't comment about that?
Of course you can.
Of
course you can.
I'm not saying. And now you can we can go. I can still go. No, I do really think people must have access to education.
Sure.
I agree.
You can have both points of view in the same mind.
Right.
It's not cognitive dissonance. It makes sense.
Right. So I go, my brother, but the shoes.
Right.
3 grand. I know this because I got a couple of pairs of those. And so that was the only thing I was saying. So I think the big fuck up I made.
They got cross with you, man.
I had been having this conversation with my friends, and we were saying, I was talking about moving. One of my friends was talking about doing a PhD, and one of my other friends was like planning to have a kid, whatever the case is. So we're making these decisions of like 30-year-olds or all that kind of stuff. And so we were like, economically, for us to fast track this whole situation, we might have to
sacrifice.
Yes, yeah, skip the car that I really want. Mm. Skip this what I really want, and really try to like invest in property. And those were the decisions we were making. Mm. And so what I did, I took maybe like that conversation, rounded up, and I just projected a fully fledged out idea amongst several people, and I put it on Twitter. And what happened was an explosion. Mm. And I was like, I was unable to articulate what I was trying to say. What I was really trying to say was a commentary. It was really a commentary on materialism. And what you were saying earlier, like these
things, the stuff that people want, the comforts, the luxuries.
Capitalism.
Sure. Hey, listen, my point is I'm not...
Yeah. I get you.
I'm not attached to this.
So I'm saying like, yeah, we you don't need... That's a tenth... You stepping on a tenth of what the fees are.
Yeah. And it's always ironic to me, and I always get into trouble for this year on year. The time when the protests come about is always when exams have to be written.
Oh, yeah, that's strategic, you know? Though.
So, yeah, but then come on. If you really cared about this, you would care about it all year long.
No. That's unfair because I go... No. The reason I say this, because I go to the Montreal Comedy Festival, and I've been there 4 times. The first 2 times, they protested during the festival.
Right.
Mainly because it's the busiest time.
Correct. They want attention. When you get attention.
Yeah. When you get the most attention, where you will... If you do it in April, April has so many holidays, or March, whatever the time is, there's people will miss it.
No one will really...
You got to know... You know, my mom gets annoyed because she studied hard for exams. And then she's like, ah, man, no, I can't write. And, you know, because she has other plans. She's like an actual human being who has other plans or other things. So if she has to write on a date she didn't intend to, she gets like, ah.
You were thinking about moving, but you want to be here.
Nah, man. I've been living in London for a year.
But do you think of yourself as a global citizen, or do you think of yourself as this is home? Or I mean, is there
South
a way?
Africa's
you
always
about?
Home. South Africa's right. Definitely always home. But there's the comedy scene is not It's not for me to flourish.
But you kind of have hit all the benchmarks already.
Yeah, yeah. But
I'll say it for you because you're a humble guy. There isn't much more you can do here.
Yeah, yeah.
To elevate yourself.
But think about it this way. Like, I think that this is such a crazy thing to say. But I think that South Africans cannot afford stand up.
Yeah.
It's not accessible to the majority of the people. People are not thinking, whereas when I tour Australia, people are...
It's part of their life.
Yeah.
They go out every night.
You know, so it's not... People are really thinking about how I'm going to feed this and the cases. So Gladwell actually wrote about this, and it talks about the event versus actual change and versus like just the idea. She spoke about Obama and how Obama could create the illusion that there's racial harmony in America because of this black president. She talked about Australia, about how they had a
female, Julia Gillard.
Yeah. As a prime minister.
Correct.
And that was almost like, but it's an event.
It's not the actual thing.
So you bring that to South Africa and you look at, the World Cup 2010. Stadiums are full. The whole country's here, everyone celebrating football. But if you go on a Tuesday to watch AmaZulu and you know what I mean, and Sundowns, no one really cares in that way.
It's still the same. That's the sad thing is that it changes much more gradual.
Yeah, yeah. So
if there's any change.
Yeah. So real tangible change takes a very long time, an extremely long time.
And these days we're also like instant gratification, fast food, check on what's going on in the news immediately, get online. It's different to the way it used to be 100 years ago when life was slower as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So now suddenly we're expected to know everything, do everything, be everything, eat everything, see everything in an instant. And the pressure is huge on people.
It's crazy. It's like with was it Bruce Jenner?
Caitlyn
Jenner. My bad. So what I'm saying is, I don't know. But what the point I'm trying to make is that you must remember, like, people that never experienced that.
Yeah.
So you have like you take my uncle. Yeah. My uncle has spent most of his life without political rights.
Yeah.
And then now he's, you know what I mean? He's like, he's trying to construct what it means for him to operate with dignity in the overall system. Then this other thing comes, right? It's hard for people to compute those kind of things. They're coming at such a crazy pace. Oh no, this dude was, you know what I mean?
It was a dude, now it's a lady. How does this work?
Yeah, what happens is it's like, okay, cool. This is how I compute this. So we never given this time. And this is a crazy thing I talk about on my show. I talk about this on my stand-up comedy show. The show is called Unlearning. And it's like me going through this journey of like unlearning things that I've grown thinking were acceptable and normal. Your inferiority complex, your masculinity, your whatever the case may be.
I mean, at the moment, the whole of Hollywood is checking out their masculinity and going, oh, this could be a problem.
Yeah, Hollywood.
Hey,
Hollywood has always been like that. It's just, you know.
Now that's coming out, that's all.
Yeah, it's
You've really, got these Harvey Weinsteins.
But
you've watched Entourage.
You've watched Entourage.
I have. And
you remember how
he was based on Harvey, right?
And he was a horrible human being.
But I think everybody knew Harvey was a horrible human being. But the fact that he was also this predator on women, I suppose the fact that it's come out is shocking to us. What do you think of what's happened with Louis C.K.? I mean, this is a great comedian. It's one of the funniest guys. He was riding high. He was probably at the top of the comedy pile.
He's my favorite.
Right? I love the guy. And then it turns out he's like jerking off in front of chicks and things. I mean, what do you make of that?
Oh man, I think as males we're all complicit in these kind of situations.
Really?
Yeah.
You feel part of it?
I'll tell you what. So last week as well, Steven Seagal.
Oh yeah, he
right?
Who was the actress? Jenna Jameson. Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah. Now I have a friend who was Steven Seagal's personal chef.
Oh, wow.
Who quit because of that.
Oh, wow.
And this was, I mean.
What a creep.
It's like two, four, and then when she told me, I mean, we were hanging out and we're good friends. We've been friends for a very long time. And I was like, oh, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But then I just moved on with my life. I was unflinched. And then last week when this came out, I was like, oh, yeah, of course.
But what are you expected to do? Must you go and accost Steven Seagal?
Well, I'm saying that what makes us complicit is the idea that I was, for some reason, I didn't think it was a crazy thing.
We just waved the stuff.
But what leads to the point where I get to wave it off? What leads to the point where it comes into a conversation and I just go, "Ah, have another drink." What, how does it get there? So obviously I've experienced this and I've, in my mind somewhere, it's normal. That's what I mean. I don't mean it like.
It's not like you're joining in.
Yeah. It's not like, it's not necessarily how, you know, I was there or actually present. Someone reached out to me and said, oh, this is what happened to me. And I didn't even offer comfort. I just kind of
just buzzed past it.
Right. And then I was like, dang.
Did you ever call her up afterwards?
Oh, no, I still talk to her. We're friends. That's what I mean. But I don't, I'm just like.
Like, I'm imagining when you see her again, you'll be like, hey, you remember that conversation? Shut up, you know?
I don't even know if this is like, is this going to make it on, this could be like one of those.
It could be a big conversation. You should have it in public. you should sit down with her and go, No, don't worry. I'm gonna, you didn't out anybody. I think that's a hell of a story, though. I mean, he's got a lot more to deal with than his chef talking about this stuff. Because now he's in big... I mean, all these guys are in hot water, and they deserve it. You can't behave like Harvey Weinstein.
It's crazy.
It's power, right?
Yeah, it's power, man. It's power.
Listen, dude, I know we went off on a bunch of tangents today. But this is also what happens when you get to know someone better, and you and I know each other well enough to have an argument and still treat each other with respect. I love your mind. I could sit and talk to you for hours. But I'm just worried. I'm just worried other people might not want to listen for hours.
For this shit? They'll just be like, yo, what the fuck?
I'm looking at Sia. Sia's going, oh, yeah.
How long was that?
Yo,
that was...
We spoke for an hour.
Yeah.
Hour and five
minutes.
Does
that make sense to you?
1 hour and 5 minutes, my friend. That's not what you do with people you don't love.
I appreciate that.
I love you, man.
What's going on downstairs?
Oh, there's TV shows they make here. They make a racket. They chase us out of our parking. It's hell. Could you find parking?
I don't have a car anymore. I sold all
you
my
Uber?
Stuff. Yeah, man.
That's beautiful.
I sold all my stuff.
I tried to Uber. I don't live close enough. So it cost me for 2 days because I thought, I'm just going to Uber, see how this goes for 2 days. 2 days, it cost me like $500. I was like,
Yeah.
And I'm not a cheapskate, but $500 is 2 days travel. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Buy a plane ticket to Cape Town for double that, you know? So what, 4 days of Uber or a trip to Cape Town?
Okay.
Anyway, love you, dude. Thanks. CliffCentral.com